It's time to reclaim control, not just of your law firm, but of your life. Welcome to the Law Entrepreneur Podcast. Discover how early adopters are leveraging cutting-edge legal tech and early adoption strategies to lead the industry while embracing work-life balance. Unlock the secrets to a thriving law practice and a balanced, happy life with the Law Entrepreneur Podcast.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome back to episode 404 of the Law Entrepreneur. It's the Sam and Neil show today, as it has been for the last couple, 3 weeks. Sam, how are you doing?
Fantastic. Doing great.
Awesome. So we have a great episode planned for you today. It's on one of the things that I know best, having been in this position for a while now, and that's making mistakes. When it comes to making mistakes, I think I'm a pro at it. And really, to be honest with you, making mistakes and learning from them is how my practice, my law practice, got off the ground. I mean, when I started my solo practice, I had been a business owner previously, and I'd made a whole lot of mistakes when I was, you know, in that business. I owned and operated a martial arts school, as many people know. So when I decided to start my own practice, I said, well, I know how to run a business. I mean, I've already made all these mistakes. So how difficult will it be to start my own law practice? Well, what I found out was there are a whole new set of mistakes to make. And I proceeded to make just about every one of them. So this is going to be, I think, something really helpful for our listeners. And, you know, don't let this happen to you kind of thing. And we've kind of distilled a lot of the specific mistakes that I think I have made and you have made and those that we know have made, and kind of generalized them into some larger category. So, Sam, why don't you get started here with our first biggest mistake that a law firm owner should avoid?
So before I share these, I also want to address every single one of these mistakes either me or Neil have made. Yeah. Both of us have made these. And also, I've probably encountered hundreds of lawyers making these same exact mistakes. And the whole point is for you to learn from it so that you could save yourself time, I would say is the most important from this, and also save a lot of money. Each of these, sometimes I look at them like, oh, that's a $200,000 mistake that, you know, our listeners can avoid. So hopefully this will be insightful. And number one is not owning your own marketing assets. Not owning your own marketing assets. Essentially having marketing companies own your ad accounts, your websites, your funnels, your email list, your contacts, your social media profiles. If that sounds familiar to you, oh, we got to do something about it. Okay. Yeah. I don't want to mention specific companies, but I know there are specific companies that do this. And obviously it's a tactic, but always make sure to ask upfront, is this made inside my ad account? Is this my website? Is this under my domain? If the answer is ever no, it sounds fishy, run for the hill.
Okay. So this was, raise your hand, Neil. This is one of my initial first biggest mistakes. And what is embarrassing about this is that I was a techie in a previous life. So when I opened my practice, I knew I needed a website. And instead of doing a lot of research or kind of figuring out, you know, what could I do on my own, or where could I find tools that will allow me to retain my marketing assets? I went to a friend's website and I loved the way it looked. And I said, okay, if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. And that's the level of analysis that I did. And so I signed on with one of those shall not be named companies. And they produced my website. I wasn't happy with it. We never got it the way I wanted to. I wanted to change things. And then they let me know, well, you don't own it. Like, what do you mean I don't own it? It's my website. No, it's our website. We just use your name. And so that was a 2-year odyssey of how do I get out of this contract? And when I did, then I rolled my own website and built my own website and things. But it's a perfect example of not owning your own marketing asset.
an asset is the most valuable thing that you can have here in law firm, right? Just in life in general, in business, you need to own assets. So if you don't own your own business assets, man, that sucks. So,
well, and here's an important consideration. If you have any thought down the line of selling your law firm, okay, you have to have something to sell. And if you don't own those assets, you have nothing to sell. Because once you go away and there's no assets, what is there for a prospective buyer to acquire? So the more you build your website, your funnels, your email list, the more you spend time creating your social media profiles and creating all these assets, the greater value you give your firm if you decide at some point it's something you might want to sell.
Absolutely. Let's go to number two. Probably one of the most common mistake is analysis paralysis, sitting on decisions. I just posted, actually, I got inspired by when I was putting this list together. I just made a post on my Facebook page. By the way, if you're not following me, go at both me and Neil on Facebook right now. The worst decision is not making a decision. The worst decision is not making a decision. How many of us have decisions or people that we've talked to or opportunities that we've been exposed to that we haven't really bit the bullet yet on? So the mindset is it's either action or action. Again, the worst decision is not making a decision. You know, it's something where you're kind of in a decision stage, you know, just bite the bullet. Even if the answer is no, then you shouldn't, at least make that decision. So you could put that behind you so that that doesn't slow you down from the other decisions you got to make, because decisions do fatigue. And if they pile on, then it kind of creates that kind of momentum of not making more decisions. However, on the other hand, you start making more decisions and you're more decisive with your decisions and you're very clear, yes or no. You know, there's a mindset of it's either hell yes or hell no, nothing in between. If you kind of have that kind of mindset, it kind of builds a momentum to get things moving forward. And obviously, when you do that, your actions will lead to faster results and, you know, bigger impact that you create.
Yeah, here again, I'm raising my hand because this was something that impacted me and retarded the growth of my law firm. And the irony is that there are so many things where I take demonstrative action right away and just leap in. We talked about this in the previous episode about just get started, learn along the way and refine and update, but just get started. And like I said, when I went to create my law firm, I said, I think I'm going to start my own law firm. Boom, started. When I wanted to do a podcast, I think I'm going to do a podcast. Boom, I started it, figured it out along the way. But there were still things that I sat on and analyzed to death, which is kind of in direct conflict with that action approach that I experienced in other areas. And a perfect example, I mentioned this the other time, was video content marketing. I sat on doing video content marketing for a long time, analyzing when would be the right time, when would conditions be perfect that I could launch my video channel and get things moving. And finally, you know, I just had to take that leap again. Action was the way to get things moving. And, you know, there was a famous quote, I think Carl Jung, I may be misquoting this, but it says, you are your actions. You are not what you think your actions should be. Something along those lines. So the more you think about it, the less doing you do, the farther it is from actually being your reality.
And it's good to be mindful of, well, like, what are the triggers of indecision? And I think for me, it comes down to FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Whenever we're confronted with either fear of the unknown, we're uncertain about something, or we have doubts about something, that's where we go into that kind of the fearful kind of side of our brain where we sit in our decisions. But instead, if you kind of look at it objectively, you're just like, I know I have thought about this, but in order for me to get somewhere, I still have to go through this dark cave and just bite the bullet and see what comes out at the end. And a lot of times in business, you don't know what you don't know, but the best way to know is to just take the leap and then analyze after the fact Don't kind of let your results speak, not kind of your own fears hold you back from where you need to go. So it's always better to lean in and just take, you know, take that risk and then decide what happens at the end.
Well, I'm interested here in mistake number three, because I can actually say this one I did not make.
Great.
So I had a pretty good handle on this, but you and I have both seen many a lawyer who suffer from this problem, many a law firm. Number three, of not having a clear schedule. And, you know, your schedule is more than just your calendar, right? And it's more than just what's on your plate at work today, because it also has to, your schedule has to take into account your personal life and your non-work hours. And I never really understood people who said, I can do all this type of planning and scheduling and task management for work, but I don't do it for my personal life, or vice versa. And so I think not having a clear schedule of what is ahead of you for that day, for that week, for that month, not having a clear task management tool that you use on a day in and day out basis, is part of the biggest mistake that lawyers can make.
And the mindset is, you won't master your life until you master your life until you master your time. Time is crucial. It really kind of determines everything in your life. You know, what kind of actions you take, who you hang out with, what you do, how you spend your time on, right? That's the only difference to be had between different people. A lot of people kind of struggle with the right tools for this. And let me just clarify. It's very simple. It's usually going to be some kind of calendar, it's your calendaring system. Either for most people, it's either going to be a Google Calendar or Outlook calendar. And then I would say that complementing with some kind of task management or project management tool, such as a Todoist or a Monday or Asana, something like that. There's something that kind of, it's a way for you to keep track of the tasks or projects that you're working on. If you have those two, that's where it's at. It's a perfect combination of things that are blocked out in your day and your week, along with kind of task and project-based kind of tracking and management.
Yeah, so I use a slightly different set of tools, but it's the same concept. As people know, I'm an Apple fanboy through and through. So I use all of the Apple calendaring tools. I actually use Fantastical, which is a calendar that's available to Apple users across all Apple platforms, and has some features that Apple Calendars itself, the native program, don't have. But I really like that for calendaring. And then I use something called Things3, which is a weird name for a task management tool. But Things3 is very similar to Todoist. And I make the distinction, I know, Sam, not everybody does, but I make the distinction between what goes on your calendar and what goes in your task management tool. And I think some people get those kind of confused, and they're less efficient as a result, or they have a less clear picture.
Yeah, and you mentioned Things3 versus Todoist. Again, I think it comes down to kind of testing it out, seeing which one is better suited for your brain and your user interface that you prefer. But both will get the job done, but at the very least, just
you make the point, or I've heard you make the point, that the tool isn't any good if you're not going to use it. So you have to pick the one that resonates with you, that works with the way you work, or looks the way you think it should look. If you're a slave to the tool, if the tool is driving you rather than you using the tool to enhance your knowledge and your capability, then you're looking at it from the wrong end of the spectrum.
Totally. And actually, last week I posted about Todoist. I said Todoist is one of the best productivity apps of all time. I highly recommend it for staying organized and efficient. Got a bunch of comments. And the reason why I posted it is because I realized I live and breathe on my Todoist. I have a a lawyer colleague who posted, has been asking me for the last couple of years, Sam, can you post up a video about how you used to do this? And I've done it and I've shared it. But I think the best, the response that I have for him is it's just better to just download it. Download the Todoist app on your computer and on your phone. Make it accessible and just click on it and just play around with it. And I think you won't learn until you actually try it out for yourself versus just watching a video. You know, it could kind of open up some doors, but I've said even bigger doors will just be you actually using it. But for me,
yeah, one of the features that I like the best is their ability to create a task from your voice. So you're able to connect it through other tools that listen to your voice that I don't want to mention here, but it, you never have to worry about finding a piece of paper to write down the task to put it in my task management tool at a later date. You just speak to your phone and tell it to add to the task list, and you sort it out after that.
Yeah, and I really I also see Todoist as my secret app, secret sauce app, where no idea is ever wasted. There's in the last couple of years, I don't think I've ever. It's very rare that I missed an idea that I came up with. I always just have a rule of thumb. As soon as something comes to me, right away, I take out my phone, no matter what time it is. Sometimes in the middle of the night or in bed.
Very often in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and it doesn't come wasted. And I put on my phone, and then in the morning when I get to my computer, the same Todoist is open on my computer. I'm able to see, okay, what can I do? How can I turn this into action? Is it something that I can delegate? Is it something that I can automate? Or is it something that I need to do right now? Or is it something I need to do, pass over, schedule it for Friday to look at? But nothing gets wasted, basically.
Yeah. What next?
Next is, let me actually bring up a story. How I learned this valuable lesson. When I started getting mentored about 5 or 6 years ago, we would have a weekly scheduled kind of mentoring sessions. And I would bring a bunch of decisions to the table. I'm like, hey, I met this vendor. Should I hire them or hire this? And his answer was both. Okay, thank you. I guess I'll go hire both. Okay, next week, I found this person to hire or this other person who has these, you know, characteristics. And then his answer would be both. I'm like, okay, thank you so much. And I would come back every week and I would keep asking these or questions. And after some time, I kind of picked up the clues. Okay, maybe the answer is, you know, both. So I changed my mindset. I stopped making or decisions and I started only making and decisions. So replacing your ors with ands. And again, it really ties into kind of the analysis paralysis. You know, if it's an or, you're going to be stuck in that middle ground. Like, what are you trying to make that decision? Instead, where your mindset is, let me try both. Let me see how can I lower the risk. Maybe I don't have to commit to anything long term. You know, right? I don't have rule of thumb. I don't commit to anything longer than 3 months. Usually is my thing. Let me try to start off with the lowest plan, something like that. See how it goes. If I get any indication that it is something that has some form of ROI, then okay, let's scale it up and let's take it to the moon. So kind of replacing the or decisions with and decisions.
I think this is something that's really uniquely Sam Malai. And we all could learn from it because I know that let's just take hiring decisions. You mentioned that as an idea. You get down to two candidates and, you know, a lot of us will, you know, go back and forth, pick one, say thank you to the other. And then, you know, 2 months goes by and maybe it's not working out as well as you would want it to. And you can't go back to that other candidate, okay? Because they've moved on. I know that you've expressed to me that there are multiple times where you'll hire both and give them similar or concurrent tasks. And then you use that as an evaluation model to determine who's going to be the best for the task at hand. And you also confided to me on more than one occasion when you identified one candidate who was the better choice, but along the way you discovered that the other candidate might be better for something else. And so the and decision was not a zero-sum game. You were able to get the best out of both candidates and put them in the right position. And I think that's a mindset that not enough of us have. And I think that's really a good point to put that on the list of don't make that mistake.
The rule of twos, and I think we should talk about that. And I think we'll have a future episode about hiring virtual assistants and the lessons we've learned along the way with that. Yeah. So maybe we'll save that for that conversation. But let's go to number five, which was kind of the hint was given in the last
story. In the last one, yeah.
Yeah, not having a mentor. Not having somebody who's more experienced, more savvy, smarter, has a bigger vision, more successful, that you're close friends with, that at least you have some form of connection and relationship and conversation with on an ongoing basis. Not just one-offs. Sure, you know, everybody could be friends with anybody, but actually a connection that you can build over time that it becomes deeper and more meaningful and also more valuable over time. For me, I've been very expressly shared it. Last 5 or 6 years, one of the biggest factors of my own growth has been having a good, amazing mentor in my life who's been able to kind of show me the ways, tap into my potential, show me what I'm good at, what I'm not good at to avoid, where I should double down on my time, what I should avoid to cut out the distractions and avoid things that, you know, take away from my time. And little by little, you know, his lessons along the way have chipped away and built me up to the person I am today. And that actually was one of the main reasons why I actually started the first Legal Funnel, which turned into My Legal Academy. Because when I saw my own growth and I realized that, hey, through this 10-minute conversation, I got the little golden nuggets that I know. And he shared this one insight with me. That just saved me a couple of years. That just, you know, saved me $100,000, $200,000 on this little hiring thing, little tip that he just gave me. I'm like, wow, that's super valuable. 10-minute conversation, $100,000. What if I could scale this and automate this value that I got through mentorship to other people? And that really kind of was one of the mission statements for Legal Funnel and for what we've been able to do the last 4 years is to provide mentorship and guidance and clarity to other lawyers through resources, conversations, accountability, and everything else that comes with that relationship. Also, you know, breaking limiting beliefs or somebody running guidance, all that stuff, you know, there's a lot of stuff that could be talked about this, but everything that comes along with that mentorship.
I never really understood why attorneys were so hesitant to take advantage of a mentor. I mean, it certainly is.
I know.
it's certainly ego.
Yep.
You know, it's a big issue, but you know, when you think about it, all successful people have coaches. The most successful professional athletes have coaches. You know, the most successful people in the entertainment industry have mentors and coaches and that take them to that next level. I think one of the things we tend to do is think, I'm only going to ever have one coach, so I have to have the right one. And we get stuck in that paralysis of analysis problem as well. I know folks who've had lots of different mentors, lots of different coaches, and that's where they get their breadth of their ideas from, by getting a different perspective. So if you don't have a mentor, start off, get one and work with them 3 months, 6 months, a year, however long you can, and then look to have another one if that's the right thing for you to do. Don't be afraid of changing mentors and changing coaches.
Yeah, and then, as you shared, a lot of people struggle, like, where am I going to find the person? Well, we created that platform for you to get exposed to other people who are all on the same kind of path. Lawyers that are growing, learning, taking all the resources they could get their hands on, and little by little building the future that they want to achieve. And that's, again, that's Lawyer Club. Join lawyerclub.com.
Yeah.
All the free resources, free mentorship, free everything you could possibly imagine. And again, on the back end, we have a My Legal Academy, our program, has a structured, organized way to provide that implementation that you need, plus the accountability and the mentorship with the extra guidance that you need to be able to kind of achieve your dreams, basically.
Well, that's our top five there, yeah. Sam.
Yeah, and the reason originally we were going to do top 10, but just made a quick little decision right now because I think I'd rather go deeper into these. So we'll save the next five biggest mistakes for our next episode. And us looking at it, you know, each one of these, again, are super, super valuable. So make sure to tune in. And if you can take a moment, please, if you've enjoyed this episode, if you haven't already left a review, please take a moment. It really helps a lot. And Neil, you've done an incredible job in the last, how many years have you been doing this, by the way, Neil?
8 years.
Wow, God bless. 8 years, yeah. 404 episodes so far. If you can, we want to keep the momentum going, but we need your input. We need your engagement for to kind of motivate us to keep this going. So please take a moment, if you can, to leave a review for our podcast. That would really appreciate it. And also, if you can, think of one person that you could share this episode with. It will add value to their life. They'll appreciate it. And you'll probably rekindle that relationship. And you can probably continue that conversation and see what comes out of it. So please take a moment to share this episode as well. We'll see you for the next episode for the five other biggest mistakes law firm owners make to avoid, to have the best year yet, part two. And we have so many, so many more that we would like to share with you in the future. I'm looking at it, the list. It looks amazing. We have a bunch of really good insights to share, Neil.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, Sam. So until next time. Thanks for being with us on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.